So this has to do with esse in existere. So as esse, the Lord, as he is in himself, is above the heavens, or the most interior aspect, because that's what above means. So what we're talking about there is that the Lord, as he is in himself, is beyond any capacity for any finite being to comprehend. And so what we comprehend of the Lord is, and this goes for angels as well, because they are infinitely below the Lord. So our comprehension of the Lord is what is termed the divine human, or the divine proceeding. So there is the Lord as he is in himself, and then there is the Lord as we perceive him. So the Lord is not even the spiritual son. He's higher, more interior than that. That's just the first manifestation in the heavens. So the point being is that the heavens are not like a container that the Lord is putting spirits into. The heavens form from the human race. They form through the mind. So talks about there being three heavens in broad terms, but there aren't three heavens before the Lord. The three heavens are a finite, bounded experience of angels. Before the Lord, all is one. It's all fully present to the Lord. But the idea of separation occurs within a finite mind because it's restricted in terms of its ability to conceive and hold what is of the Lord. And so those of a celestial genus are in the celestial heaven. Well, in actual fact, their mind is the celestial heaven. And for spiritual angels, their mind is the spiritual heaven. And for those in the natural heaven, it's the same. So the difference is in the receptiveness of those who are receiving the Lord. That's what creates the particular heaven they experience. So whenever the word said or says comes up, it's perception related to influx spiritually. Israel is spiritual good. So it's perception from spiritual good in response to Joseph. But Joseph is what is most interior. So he represents the internal celestial. And Israel saying to Joseph comes from Joseph. It's the influx actually into spiritual good that allows spiritual good to have a perception of what is more interior. So this comes up earlier, which was something that caught my attention, which is at the very start. And that has to do with Israel seeing the sons of Joseph and whose are these? What's this about? So what struck me about that is this idea of how questions arise in us. So in a similar way to where you have this confusion over what's first, faith or charity, there's a similar thing here. What's first, the answer or the question? And so what it is, though, is that the influx of the Lord is what raises the questions in our mind that appear to be coming from us. But what's happening is that those questions are directing our attention to something. And that is the Lord doing that. So actually, the Lord being the answer, of course, the questions aren't first. They're first in time. They're the first thing we experience, if you like. But in actual fact, the questions come out of what is good because it's trying to direct us toward something that we need to give our attention to. So I thought that was a really nice way of just thinking about questions and answers. And of course, in logopraxis, we talk about the fact that we are led by the questions, not by having the answers. And the reason for that is in terms of our experience. When we come into contact with the text, questions arise, and the questions move us from a literal reading of it into a more spiritual reading of it. But that's all motivated by the end, which is what the Lord is looking to achieve, which is the salvation of the human race. And I think that fits in with that 6262 number as well. You have this idea of elevation to the internal. And so questions is what elevates our mind into what is more interior. And the idea there is that the appearance is that the external is elevated. But what that means is that the internal is more present within it, because these things remain in their discrete degrees. So the communication gives the impression of something being elevated, or even of the internal being present in the natural. But what it's more like is a resonance, a correspondence, or a co-responding of things. So again, this comes back to this idea of correspondence. You know, how do we understand, or influx, how do we understand this idea of influx? And the common way of understanding it is like one vessel having fluid in it and being poured into another. So a jug pouring some fluid into a glass. That's kind of how we first understand this idea of influx. But actually, it's not that. And the writings specifically say that it's not that. A better way of thinking about it is resonance, say, between guitar strings. Like you strum one string and the other strings will start to vibrate without them actually touching each other. And that's a resonance that's set up because there is a correspondence in terms of vibration frequency. And that's more what it's about, because with us, what's happening through our work is that the work is bringing order into the natural. Or, you know, what does that mean? Well, it means that it's bringing the natural into a form whereby it can receive what is internal, more internal. And when that natural comes into that form, then there is a co-respondence or a correspondence, and it appears as if the internal has come into the external, or that the external has been elevated into the internal. But that's not actually what's happening. It's that this resonance aspect is able to actually manifest itself. So then the internal is able to manifest itself in the natural by means of this alignment. And that's why we need truths and we need to practice them, because that's what brings about this alignment. And then there's a connection, what we term a connection, but it's not a connection of touch to touch. It's a connection of, again, you know, the best term I think is resonance. There's action and reaction. If you think about the uses of different appliances, it's the same electricity, but producing different reactions according to the form of the recipient vessel. So, you know, a blender blends, a mixer mixes, a toaster toasts, you know. It's attunement. It's having in the mind what's capable of giving form to what's there. So we need a body, because the body gives us a very concrete experience of spiritual principles. So the example is that because you're in a body, you have this separation from the spiritual world, because all your senses are orientated outwardly. And so what that provides is actually a sense of, well, for a start, if you look at a child's development, well, a human being's development through all those stages, what we come to experience is that I am this body, because that's the belief that's held, and the whole world revolves around me. So it gives you that experience. Now, the truth in that experience is that there is a being around which everything revolves at the center of all. That's the truth. The falsity is that you are it, and that's what has to be put off. Also, through the body senses, you get an experience of things flowing in. The appearances is that everything flows in through the senses, and that gives you a concrete experience of what influx is. So if you take the universe as the divine, the infinite divine, and everything flows in through your senses, you have a concrete experience of influx, at least so far as an appearance is concerned. But until you're enlightened by truths, you believe that things flow from without to within. And it's truths that turn that around and give you a new idea of influx, which is that, no, that's an appearance. Everything flows from within out. But the only way you can grasp that is because you have experienced the opposite of that, and now it gets flipped. And again, the falsity that is established through believing the appearances of the senses has to be put off so that that more interior understanding can actually start to govern the mind. And that has a big effect, because what it means is that you no longer see causes outside of yourself in terms of your state. You flip it around and you see that what's happening on a more exterior level is an effect and the cause is more interior. And that's what you've got to work with if you want to change the experience that you're having through whatever the effect is that you're caught in. So just coming back to this idea of the redeeming angel and the Lord's divine human, the divine human is the Word. So from a logopraxis perspective, the divine human are the principles and truths that the Word offers us. So they turn around the inverted thinking when we live from that. That's redemption on a more micro scale. So as we begin to live from these truths and integrate them into our life so that they start governing our thought processes, we are basically saved from hell, which is the proprium, or the belief that the proprium is something that it isn't, you know, an independent autonomous being. It's not. And so this is the idea of the Lord's divine human being the redeeming angel. These truths and the practice of them turns things around, and that's what delivers us from those false beliefs and dominance of the love of self and love of the world. We're always really limited in our understanding of things. And so what we do pick up is what's needed to move the process forward. I think that's the important thing to remember. And it's not about being able to grasp all this. It's about just being able to work with whatever arises through our contact with it, because that's what matters. So thanks for your work over the year. It's been rich, and I wish you all a very insightful and contemplative festive season. I'm sure there'll be many moments of insights into a deeper sense of what the incarnation means for everyone. So just let me read a verse from our psalm today. I rejoice at your word as one who finds great treasure. Amen.